What's up, everybody?
What's happening, family?
And welcome back to another episode of Is This Gonna Cause an Argument? My name is Angel Lakeetamore Tanksley, also known as That Chick Angel. And I am joined by my co-host and husband of 13 years. Tell him who you are, baby.
I am Marcus Tanksley, also known as Tank, also known as Marcus Ain't on the Gram.
We are doing this podcast series right now that we're so excited about, called Family and Finance. However, a little bit just about our podcast in general. We tackle any and everything we want to, okay? Whether it be relationships, whether it be politics, whether it be the baby yelling at me in the background. We cover it all, and we're here every single Wednesday. Big shout out to our Patreon family that is watching this live.
That's our media family. What's up, family?
Banger. If you want to be able to watch this live, you can join our Patreon at www.patreon.com/thatchickangel. Now, we have special guests with us today, because like I said, we're doing a family and finance series. This is part two. Make sure you check out part one, where me and Marcus discuss our money story. But these are actually really good friends of ours that we have on today. And what our goal is for this series is to just give you, the viewers, the listeners, enough perspectives that you hopefully like can find hope or direction in one of the perspectives that you're getting from. Because I do think there are a couple of ways to make things work out for you. You just have to figure out which one that you can actually like stick with. So I'm going to let my friends, Damian and Jamie Thompson, introduce themselves and tell you just a little bit about themselves before we jump into our usual first segment, which is In Our Feelings. So Damian, Jamie, tell them who you are.
I'm Jamie Thompson.
And I'm Damian Thompson. Jamie and I have been married for 18 years, and we got three daughters, Brianna, Reagan, and Madison, 19, 15, and 13. So we got three teen girls. So we're perpetually stressed and perpetually broke, basically.
Dude, don't lie to these people.
You lying, y'all. We're keeping
the truth out here.
We're here to say we have no money. That's why we came to the finance.
We're here because we're broke and we're hoping we can figure this out. They also to give context for when we jump more into their story, they are located back in our home state of Kentucky. So that can also give you all just a little bit of parameters of like cost of living. And real quick, again, before we jump into our first segment, what do both of you all do for a living?
Oh, I'm a legal assistant for, I would say local, but we're really kind of national, for a franchise. I'm in legal franchise. So I work for a company that owns several different restaurant franchises.
Mm-hmm. I have several jobs. I pastor a church here in Kentucky. As well, my 9-to-5 is I am a software engineer, and I have several variations of my software engineerdom. So that's what I do, you know, 9-to-5. I've been doing that for about 20 years, ever since right at college.
Now, for those of y'all who just tuned in, you all didn't see that this software engineer messed this whole top up by using the wrong hardware.
Is that how we started?
I want people to understand that we are actual friends. So you're going to get all the smack.
Marcus is my friend. You're married to my friend. Is what's happening.
We've established that multiple times.
Yes.
And the lies that you all tell. Yeah. So we're going to jump into our first segment. We would love for you all to participate, Thompsons, if you all would want to. It's called In My Feelings. It's what's got us feeling either good or feeling some type of way this week. So what's got you? Oh, Marcus is ready. He's at the tip of his tongue. Please, go ahead.
You know, I don't put my personal friendships out there like that. You know,
I didn't realize this was what it was going to be.
You know, I can't. I don't want to go into too much detail. You know, I'm kind of a private person.
Is he?
I am. I'm a private person. But yeah, that's what's got me feeling good.
Oh, no, no. Just in case people are not watchers of the vlog.
Of the vlog. So on Instagram, I put up a video of my heartbrokenness over not being able to get certain paraphernalia that a certain icon put out.
A Colin Kaepernick.
Look, hey, don't be saying people's names. I told you I want to protect my friends. Okay? Don't do that. That is so rude of you. Uh-huh. The great number 7 did drop a triple black jersey. I did everything within my power to get it, and it looks like I may be getting it.
I mean, they did ask for address.
We've spoken on many terms. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can't tell me a damn thing. I'm sorry. Right.
Yeah, the partner hit you up.
Uh-huh. Ain't nobody tell me nothing.
Okay. So it still got you feeling good?
Girl, who you telling? I'm trying to tell you.
If y'all, please go check out our vlog, because if y'all could have seen Marcus in my house robe that said, my plush house robe that said Angel on it. Giddy. He was like...
You know, me and CK, we go back because, like, we've actually met CK? Y'all know him as Colin. We go back a couple years, you know, me and the Mrs. You know, we all cool like that. Yeah. I'm going to tell y'all, go ahead.
What?
Nothing, go ahead.
He literally lost his mind, and it was so funny that the news was given to him while he was in the restroom.
I was in the restroom on the toilet, and when I tell you, I walked out of the bathroom like I was fully dressed.
That is how excited he was.
You might want to watch it, Rose.
A whole mess.
It's going to smell like man shit.
Yeah. But that was a good one. What's got me feeling good?
Me making new friendships is what's got you feeling good. Check this out. Yeah, I ain't gonna say that. I protect my friends.
He is a whole mess about it, but it was nice to see him get excited.
Genuinely, like, you could feel their energy through just the messages. Like, they are extremely kind, genuine people.
And
I won't say who, you know, I'm protecting the innocent, but.
The innocent. Oh my gosh, she's a fool. Oh, I know what's got me feeling good. Is that you can see that I'm losing weight.
You are.
You can see it. You see his face. I'm telling you, WWE is doing what it needs to do. And I'm just so happy about it. Like, it's good. You know how you do one workout and you like, why ain't I thin yet? Like,
I worked out for 15
minutes. I skipped breakfast. What happened?
Yeah. Right. I ate good today. I ate, like, appropriately. Why am I not thin already? I need to be there already. So it's nice to see that, like, it's already showing up.
Yeah.
I'm seeing stuff fit differently.
Yeah, we do this, The Bald and the Beautiful. We do this other show. It's a review of a show. And people in the comments talking about Angel's legs. And just like, and I know eventually it'll come up. Marcus, do you have a problem with that? I'm like, first of all, if you're not checking out my wife's legs, you're not attractive to women. Like, that's just I'm not bothered about it. She know what she got.
I told Marcus, I said, by this time, by next summer, I said, these legs keep pulling together. I said, the yams is out all summer.
They was out this past summer. Like, what are you talking about?
He said, Angel, you just plan on not wearing bottoms because your thighs was out all this year already. I was like, nah, you ain't seen nothing.
So she planning on going to prison?
No.
Whatever works.
So Damien and Jamie, do y'all have something that's got y'all either feeling good or feeling some type of way?
Well, I think I found all that weight that you lost.
Yeah, it got dropped off at the conference house.
I'm feeling some kind of way about that. You're like, even playing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to the point where my boss expressed that she would like me to start working in the office more.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I think I need some new pants. I mean, leggings are really not appropriate for the office. Right.
They're gonna be when you start wearing them.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So I haven't been shopping or anything. I went online and I couldn't find, you know, the dress pants that I like. And I just couldn't find them. They didn't have them online. So I'm like, I'm going to have to go to the store. I haven't been to a store since
ever.
March.
Yeah. Light years.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to have to just suck it up and go into the store. I go into a store, and I won't say what store it was. You know, ready to buy several pairs of pants, even though I had swore I was not going to buy any fat pants, but we gonna have to do what we gotta do.
Right.
So I go in and I can't find this particular style of pants, and I really want this particular style of pants.
Yeah.
And I can't find it, so I asked the man, you know, hey, do you have these pants? And he looked, he's like, I don't think we have those. Let me look online. And I'm like, well, I did that, but maybe they call us something different now. I don't know. Go ahead. See if you can find them. He looks and he says, nah, I don't see these. We don't sell these anymore. Mm. I said, what you mean you don't sell them no more? I just bought some. And this is bad. I'm like, I just bought some in the winter, which is just a few months ago. But we're not going to get into that.
It's winter again.
Yes.
My self-esteem was steadily dropping because I'm like, I just bought some like around Christmas time.
And you're like, really bad. Another
then I got to go up a size.
Oh yeah, I would have been hurt. Like,
wait. I was like, the fact that I had to say that out loud, yeah. It did something to my spirit. But I needed to know how very important it was that I found these pants. He's like, no, they don't make these no more. And then he asked me, are they men's pants?
Oh.
No, they ain't men's pants. Do I look like I wear men's pants?
Hey, man, listen.
And, you know, and I'm not a mean person, but at this point I'm getting frustrated. I'm like, with your little skinny pants wearing stuff. Right. Where's your pants?
Right. Yeah. She's like, you over here wearing leggings to work.
Do you wear women's pants? Right. Those look like the style I wear.
No, right. So I get upset.
I'd be like, is your mama wearing men's?
Right. So I'm like, I guess, you know, he's like, well, you can look at these. I don't want those. That's not what I came here for.
Give me the pants that I want.
You know, I tried to, you know, kind of pretend like I was looking, but I end up leaving. I was like, just forget it. So then I'm like, well, I'll just run to the mall and see if I can find, you know, I'll go to this other store that I know that typically, you know, if I'm in a pinch, I can get some at this other store. Mm-hmm. Girl. I walk into this store, and I hadn't been to the mall, I mean, probably since Christmas.
Way back in the 2019s.
I walked into the store, and it was closing.
Oh, no. Going away.
70 to 90% off.
Oh, yeah.
Fixtures will be sold. I'm talking everything is, and I'm like.
They sell them the cash registers and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't get no pants, but she got some racks.
Everything. And I was like, is this due to COVID? Like, yes, it is. And I'm like, is it just the store? Can I go to the outlet?
No,
the outlet's closing on Saturday. Everything shut down.
God dang.
We just gonna start throwing this on people's cars.
Right.
Right. Like,
okay, before I leave, do y'all got these pants before I go?
Right.
They didn't have nothing. I was like, I'm going to be wearing leggings.
Yes. Listen, ain't no wrong with it.
And yes. Dresses.
Some cute leggings.
Here it comes.
Before we get into what's got y'all feeling good, because I feel bad for you, Jamie, I want to bring up what's got us feeling good, and that is Usual Wines. This is our first sponsor of today's episode, and they have sponsored so many episodes of Is This Going to Cause an Argument? We are huge fans of Usual Wines. So Usual Wines are wines for the modern drinker. Each bottle is about 6.3 ounces. It's about a heavy pour or a glass and a half. There's no more pouring wine down the sink when you don't want to finish a bottle because of the single serve format and the bottle design. Usual Wines is always fresh, no more flat, bubbly, or stale rosé. The bottle is shaped like this really cute beaker. It's like, it's very, you ain't gonna find this no other place.
And it's good.
The wine is so fresh. God. It's so crisp. The rosé, I'm telling you, it does something for my soul. Mm-hmm. I am a fan of it. And what's great is that it comes from some of the best places to get wine in the world, which is the American viticultural area. So that's Napa, Sonoma, Santa Barbara. It's made with minimum intervention, zero sugar, and zero additives. It is low carb and 0 grams of sugar. They have a red blend, a rosé, and a sparkling white wine called Brut. Now, even though grapes have sugar, this wine doesn't have sugar because of the way they ferment. A lot of other wine companies will stop fermentation so that there's sugar left into the wine. The way that usual wine does is they ferment so that all the sugar is out and all you are left with is a dry wine that has a nice alcohol in it, which mama likes, okay? Makes me very happy. Yes, and a dry wine, oh, means that it's lower in calories. Come on, give the Lord a praise, somebody. I'm here for it. Also, they don't add any sugar additives or chemicals because the U.S. allows people to put like over 60 different additives in wines. And usual wines is like, no thank you, we're good. So, you all can check out Usual Wines at their website at www.usualwines.com and use our discount code ARGUE for $8 off your first order. And you can try your first glass on us. Again, that is www.usualwines.com using our promo code ARGUE for $8 off your first order and try your first glass on us. Thank you again, Usual Wines. Y'all are the best.
Love y'all, Usual Wines.
So, Damien.
Yo.
What's got you feeling some type of way, my man?
So I didn't realize that this had me in my feelings until y'all started talking.
What?
I went to the doctor on Thursday, which is a traumatic experience for me. I've been a big boy for a long time. Uh-huh. So getting on the scale at the doctor's office is always traumatic. But my doctor is big dude sensitive. So the scale is in kilos rather than pounds. So it gives you a visual like you ain't that big, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because you'll be seeing like a one something rather than a more than one something.
Then
you add that 30% to it. It's like, hold on.
Right, right. So you gotta, like, you gotta, if you don't wanna do math, you don't know how much you weigh. So right. I like that. Right. So anyway, I get on the scale and the little nurse writes down, she asks me what the number is. I give her the number, she writes it down. My doctor comes in, she looks, she says, well, you've lost some weight, which I know I haven't. I said, well, if you think, you might think that, but my pants say otherwise. These unbuckled jeans say that I haven't lost weight. Uh-huh. So she argued me down over the course of the visit on how I lost weight. And then she started doing some figuring. She said, since the last time I saw you, you've lost 50 pounds. I said, that's impossible.
Right.
I said, you're mistaken. So now we're arguing about my weight. I said, listen, now one thing, I know my body. I know when I've lost weight, I know when I've gained weight. I have not lost no 50 pounds. Nobody's 50 pounds. I ain't lost a 50 pound baby. I ain't lost 50 pounds of nothing. That's just not true. Argue so much that she made me weigh again. Now the whole office is there. And I had to weigh again.
She calling people in. Come on, Chlorine, come on.
Come see this. The amazing growing man.
Right.
And I said, listen, I'm telling you, she made me get back on the scale. Of course, it was wrong. The lady wrote the number down wrong, transposed the numbers, which was a 50-pound difference. I went from her proud of me to her looking at me with a look of judgment, just a disdain about my character. Oh. I'm the same guy. I'm the same. You loved me a second ago. What happened?
Like, I said, you just like me. She's like, oh.
Judging you, just disappointment.
Oh, that's what you kept saying. Oh,
it's like you need to be like the Damien 10 minutes ago who had been down 50 pounds because of dedication and hard work.
Right.
The past.
So what I put on Twitter is the flu shot made me gain 50 pounds. That's what I'm going with.
You like, I was 50 pounds a couple minutes ago. Only thing that's different is I got the flu shot. So yep. Y'all need to.
It must cause swellation.
Oh, bless it. Bless it. I'm sorry.
I'm not happy. Just so you know.
It's your winter weight. Just don't gain no more weight.
We'll winter.
It'll be your. I know. She's like, we ain't there. We just
got out of the sweat months.
See? We just going to call it winter weight now. Winter.
I look like I ate Winterfell, is what I look like.
Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into the topic of today's episode. So Damien and Jamie are people that I have known for a long, long time. Me and Damien met through a mutual friend, and then we all became friends, even though we are, states apart, thousands of miles apart, we've been able to remain in contact. And I have always known Damien, especially, to be very money-wise, and not just money-wise, because he is a type that like knows where he wants his money to go. So like, even if it might not be, not to put any judgment on any of your decisions, even if it might not be the wisest choice, you are intentionally putting money in certain places, which a lot of people, I know for me, and possibly sometimes for you, it's not that our money is intentionally leaving. It's leaving out of just, you know, piss poor habits in some cases.
No, mine, I pretty much intentionally put my money in places. 30% of the time is not wise where I put it, but I know exactly where it's going.
Well, I'm saying like we don't budget when we are eating out.
Oh, absolutely not.
That's what I mean by some of our money is just walking out the door and we're not even being like, no, I want you to go there. No, I'm watching it.
Wow. Yeah. It's like, all right, have a good one. I walk you right to the door and to your car.
Yeah. As I talked to Damien about it a little more, I also realized that some of his money habits obviously are greatly influenced by his wife and how she handles money. So I would love first to start off with you all's money story so people can get a clear understanding of like your relationship with money, even prior to becoming husband and wife. Like, what were you all's money stories? Jamie, if you don't mind starting.
Okay. Well, before we got married, you know, I had a job. I was in school. I was pretty tight with my money. I balanced my checkbook.
Oh, you were one of those people that actually with the paper and balance.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I had, you know, that little log in front of your checkbook. I had
the ledger. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wrote paper checks for bills because it helped me to see, you know, it's a visual thing and it was a mental thing. If I see that I'm writing this money out of my account, it made me more mindful. Oh, I just gave this away. Even though it's not coming out right away, I know it just gave me a better sense of what I have and what I don't have.
Now, did you learn that from your parents? Was that like some of your parents did, or was it just the personality of yours?
My dad did that. I mean, he kept all of his bills and he would keep the bills for, you know, every month. He would keep them all, like all of the utility bills, all of the water bills, all of phone bills. He kept all of that for the year and he kept it all in a box. And he would sit down at the kitchen counter and he would write out the bills. I mean, I saw him. He never taught me, but I saw him do this every month. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just something that I just kind of picked up from him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, yeah, I mean, for me, when it was just me, I mean, I could tell you down to the dime, like, this is what I have.
Now, you said you're tight with money. So does that mean that you rarely bought stuff, or that you bought only inexpensive stuff, or you only bought stuff that was a necessity? Like, where did you fall?
Before we got married, I didn't buy a whole lot of stuff, but the stuff that I did buy, I kind of have expensive taste. So the stuff that I buy wasn't going to be super cheap. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But
okay.
I mean,
so you weren't go ahead.
So I was never the type to go shopping every weekend. Mm-hmm. That wasn't going to happen. I didn't drink. So it's not like, and I didn't club. So it's not like I was going to the club every weekend. I was kind of boring. So that helps me save money. But you know, if I decided that, you know, I wanted a new pair of shoes at the end of the month, I could buy a new pair of shoes. You know, I wasn't going on these huge shopping sprees, but if I wanted to buy a new pair of Nikes, I could buy a new pair of Nikes.
Right. You weren't frugal with the fact of you weren't like at the thrift store, but correct. You weren't wasteful by the fact that you didn't have a bunch of hobbies that were eating up your money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. So, Damien, what about yourself? Oh, wait a minute. And Jamie, was your mom a stay-at-home mom or was she a career woman as well?
No, my mom worked. Yeah, she both worked. My parents worked.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yes, Damien, please.
So, my parents, I grew up in a trailer in Grenada, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
So, we, my first 8 to 10 years of living, we were in a trailer. My parents are both educators, but they're educators in Mississippi, which mm-hmm. is the lowest paying state in the nation.
Uh-huh.
So my mom and dad, they really didn't teach us a whole lot about money management, but what they did teach us is the art of the grind.
Uh-huh.
Both of my parents, all of my life, have worked multiple jobs.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when I was a little boy, my dad had two jobs. My mom sold Mary Kay. She did cheerleading clinics. She was judging for dance competitions. Like, both of my parents were on the grind. Mm-hmm. My dad worked a second job and paid for my mom to go to grad school, and she got her counseling degree. And then my mom worked from her Mary Kay money. She paid for my dad to go to grad school, and he got his administrator's license. And that's how they flipped the game.
Okay.
And so I guess seeing that, I've always been of the same mindset of that if I have to double up my, if I need more money, then I just have to do more in order to raise more money. But in terms of money management, I'm not as meticulous as Jamie is. But I am very, very deliberate. You know, I try to move with purpose. I try to make sure that what I'm doing is in a grand scheme. I rarely make a move that doesn't have a long-term end in mind. So, you know, and I'm not real sentimental about purchases. So, you know, I don't have loves. Like, when I buy a car, I am strictly functional. I'm trying to buy, I have a price point and a mileage point, and I'm trying to get to that point. That car can be, you know, rainbow colored. They just gonna think I'm a part of the community. I'm just with it. You know, it don't even matter because I'm functional like that. So that has helped me, you know, and just grinding and making sure that I have a passion to make sure I take care of my family. So that keeps me from, I try not to do foolish stuff with my money. I don't like losing money. I don't like wasting money or wasting time. So I got no time for either one of those acts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's interesting because it's like similar to you guys' parents, especially my dad. He was extremely organized when it came to the bills, and like he would also keep the bills, and that he had his checkbook out, and I heard him and my mom always discussing, you know, what we're gonna do with the bills and the checkbooks, and did you balance your checkbook? That was my dad's biggest thing. It's like, did you balance that checkbook? I heard him say that so many times, like just throughout my childhood. Did you balance that check? Yeah, Nate, I'm gonna get to it, you know, mama. But they were both similar. They've always, as we said the last podcast, they've always good with money, but they never, and I'm curious if your parents did the same thing. My parents never sat down and taught me to do anything. It's just like they were good with money. They did well with it. And it's like I just kind of try to use it as an experience to teach mm-hmm. me. But it was nothing that they've ever sat down. I was like, all right, so this is how you do this. My dad always gave me little coaching things on like how to save money or do this and do that. But it was never like, this is how we do this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was that the case for you, Damien?
Yeah, I learned a lot from my parents, but I didn't learn it until I was out of the house. I had to kind of double back and ask questions, especially when I was in college, because you know, I went to college, I had a scholarship, a football scholarship, but you know, there's always incidentals that you need to take care of. And so I've been working since I was 14. Well, really before that, I had a paper route when I was 11. So I had a paper route that I made about $100 a week. I stacked that $100. When I got to middle school, I had a bank account with about $600 in it that I had saved. from birthday money to my paper route, all that stuff, you know, that I just said, I'm going to save it until I find something I want to buy. So I bought my first Nintendo with my money, you know, when the PlayStation 2 came out, I paid for it. You know, those were things that were important to me, but I really didn't have no philosophy. I was just kind of out there just doing my thing. I bought my own first car, you know, my parents paid the insurance, of course, but I put about $1,000. I worked at Mr. Gaddy's Pizza, and I put $1,000. I bought an old used Audi that had been sitting because of a widow husband's car, and she hadn't touched it since he died. And when I bought the car, I had to kill a snake under the hood because it was a snake in the hood.
But you started out.
Well, that's Damien. Damien
started off bougie. I bought my first car. Was an Audi.
Right. A snake Audi, though.
16. I was 16. Bought my first Audi.
The windows didn't work, though, Marcus. The odometer didn't turn. You know what I'm saying?
That to give y'all some backstory, Damien is who we call anytime we're buying a computer. And Damien is quick to buy something used at a cheaper value to do the thing he needs it to do. That is him. When he says he's all functional, he's truly functional in those things.
We're similar in the same way because me, I tell people all the time, I refuse to buy a brand new car. I'm like, that's the worst investment you could possibly make is a brand new car. Because like you drive it off the lot, as soon as those tires hit that pavement, that's like 10-15% loss you just took. If you were to make a U-turn and go back in there and sell it back, they're not going to give you half of what you just, well, maybe a little over half, but not much. But that's me. I'm like, no, I'll buy it already broken in.
That thing had a snake under it.
It was broke. It was a mobile home is what it was.
So let's jump into the meat of it. So when you all's worlds came together, what was probably the most difficult thing that you all experienced trying to get your money stories or your goals financially to align? Or was it like easy?
No, it wasn't easy. Mm-mm. So when we got married, we had a 6-month-old baby. Mm-hmm. And when our first daughter was born, you know, we both had jobs, but Damien was like, I think I would feel more comfortable if you stayed home. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? I was thinking 4 weeks that I'm gonna go back to work. Which I know that's in my mind. That's what I had thought. And then I had a C-section and reality quickly taught me otherwise. But he was like, yeah, I just don't think I feel comfortable with her being in a daycare. And at first, you know, I kind of pushed back on it. And then, you know, then the baby's born. And I was like, oh, you're right. I can't put her in the daycare. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay with my baby. So we end up, you know, I'm like, but how are we going to make this work? You know, how do we have a baby and two adults and live off of one income?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, well, I feel like if we're smart and, you know, if we can function off of one income now, then we'll be set for life. You know, and honestly, that was the foundation. So, you know, we had a newborn baby or 6-month-old baby. We functioned off of his job, just his income. Now I was extremely, extremely frugal because now I realize I'm not bringing anything to the table. Okay. And we've got diapers. I started out breastfeeding, but then by 6 months we had weaned her, so she was on formula, which is expensive, and she had tummy issues, so she had to be on soy.
Mm-hmm. Check some special bougie milk that you only find in certain stores.
Right. She's like, the bougie's gonna come out.
Yeah, she's still like that, by the way.
She is. She's not very much like that. You know, if it wasn't for the baby, I didn't buy it. And I think that I functioned that way for at least the first year.
Yeah.
Unless it was for the baby, I didn't buy it. Of course, food. I went to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. But I did not buy anything. I did not shop. I did not go anywhere because, in my opinion, I didn't want to add any financial burden to our plate. Mm-hmm. We have one bank account. Obviously, I wasn't putting nothing in it. You know, why did I need a separate account? And because we had one bank account starting out, that's just the way we've always functioned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And out of every decision we've made, the one bank account has been the one that we've gotten the most pushback from.
Oh, yeah.
From my family, her family. I mean, you know.
People don't understand that.
People think it's.
Honestly, I'll be honest with you. That shocked me because my parents only had one bank account.
Mine too.
I didn't know that anybody else functioned any other way. I really didn't. I didn't know that people had separate bank accounts. I didn't know that people like separate their money, or I pay this bill, you pay that bill. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that other, you know, couples function like that.
Mm-hmm. But them church mothers used to whisper in Jamie's ear about having her own stash of money. Don't you be letting that man run all that money. You put your little something away and stick it right up in here.
Seriously. I'm not joking. They said, you know, every woman needs to have a separate savings account at a different bank. Mm-hmm. I've heard that so many times.
Oh, I've heard it too. I have. Actually, our next guest is going to probably talk about that.
But, you know, I had to ask. I'm like, well, if it's okay for me to have my little separate
stash,
is it okay for him? Because if I find out his separate stash is bigger than mine, I'll be a little upset about it.
Right. I want to know what you all's goal was in that first year. But before you all tell me, I'm going to tell you all about our next sponsor, Magic Spoon. Y'all, cereal. Cereal is Marcus's jam.
I love me some cereal. That's my ish.
Cereal is one of those things, like, when you don't feel like cooking nothing else, or when you don't have the money to spend on nothing else, cereal be that clutch. It be that thing that goes, you know what? I will remain faithful. No matter if you are in feast or famine, you can always feast on me. Now, Magic Spoon is something different, though. It's not that typical cereal you get that'll have you at the doctor's and them telling you, oh, no, you still got that extra 50. That's you got that extra 50 on you. That is not Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon has zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. There are 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, blueberry. What's yours?
I like that blueberry.
I mean, he went on that frosted like I was, but I was tearing that frosted up. Thing was only 3 WW points. I was like, me and Frosted is like gay. We like gay.
I didn't pay no attention to no type of points. I just made sure my bowl was full.
And it tasted so it tasted so good. It was almost like a dessert. Oh, I'm here for it. It's keto-friendly, gluten-friendly, grain-friendly, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. I promise you that one. I thought it would be cocoa, and then it was fruity. No, I thought it would be cocoa. Then it was blueberry for me. Then I tried that frosted, and I was like, shut everything down. I'm here for that frosted. This is what we want you all to do. We want you all to go to magicspoon.com/argue to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code argue at checkout to get free shipping. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with an 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund you your money, no questions asked.
Send it to me.
That's magicspoon.com/argue and use the promo code argue for free shipping. We thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring our podcast. So you guys, in your first year of having the baby and you not spending any money outside of food or for the baby, what was you all's overall goal? Was it just to get by, or did y'all have like, we are putting
absolutely survival.
Uh-huh.
Now, keep in mind, at this time, we're not making a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
Like, I made $48,000 a year.
So. And we had a mortgage.
Yeah, I already had a house. Mm-hmm. So here we are with, you know, basically after, you know, budgeting gets real simple when you ain't got no money. I mean, we paid the essentials, and then we kept the kid alive, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, good.
That's when we realized that the way we handle money is completely different. Yes. Completely different. And, you know, So in my household, my dad handled all the bills. He handled all the money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would hear him, like, my parents would save for Christmas. Like, they had a Christmas account. My mom was a loan officer at the credit union. So, you know, I just remember, you know, I remember hearing them talk about the Christmas account and how so much money would come out of each check for the Christmas account. And then in December, you know, now we've got X amount of money for Christmas.
Just for that.
When I brought that up to Damien, he was like, what? Mm-mm. Christmas account.
Look, I hit him with that old school. You got Christmas money?
He was like,
we would if we saved up all year.
He was like, it's March. Why are we gonna have a Christmas account?
Marcus, I was talking strong then. But yeah. Now, man, I live for that Christmas savings, boy. Look, January, I'd be like, we can put that away for Christmas.
Yes. And here's the thing. It's like I've talked to a lot of people, like, you know, especially, I ain't going to say all black folk, but a lot of black folk, when they decide they want to go on vacation, like, they'll say, okay, let's go ahead and buy some plane tickets. But we talk to those people that are, like, budget friendly in the mind. They'll save up 3 or 4 years for a vacation.
Yeah.
That way, when they take their vacation, it's just like, oh, we don't have to worry about anything. This is not taken from any of our finances
because
we plan for this.
Right. You
know, like, having a Christmas account is genius.
Yeah. See, and that's where my dad was. He was like, if we took a vacation, it's because we saved for it. You know, he would have, and he'd pay cash with everything because this is the money that I saved for it. And like you said, I mean, you didn't have to worry about anything. You know, because it's all right there. You got what you need. So I remember bringing that up to Damien because I think we were going to go out of town. And I was like, we didn't save for this. Because we were going to go to Mississippi. And I'm like, we didn't save for this. We didn't save gas money. We didn't save for the food that we're going to eat on the way. We didn't. I mean, I know we're going to stay with his parents, but I mean, we got to get there. We got to get back. Right. We didn't save for this. And he was like, what?
You overlook out like there's no travel in September on here. What are we doing? What are you
thinking
about? Right. Now, go ahead, Jamie. What were you about to say?
Oh, I mean, but so, you know, it took me out of my comfort zone. He was like, we'll be fine. It's okay. And we, you know, somehow we were able to fill up the tank and eat. And so when I would travel with my family, we would only like go through a drive-thru and get some McDonald's or, you know, whatever we could eat in the car because it was an 8-hour drive from Maryland to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Damien was like, oh, there's an Old Charlie's. Let's go sit down and eat. Oh, there's a Texas Roadhouse. Let's go sit down. And I was like, what?
Cinnamon butter.
Not only did we not budget for this, but we about to sit down and eat?
You're like, you've lost your mind. Yeah,
you mean we got to tip people? Are you crazy?
Damien, I need you to run it back a little bit and explain to people how you ended up buying your first house, because you can't say we were making only $48,000 and say I already had a house. So explain that story a little bit, because it is something I want to dive in deeper about.
Okay. So my aunt, my dad's sister, when we were little, me and my brother were little boys, she would give us savings bonds for our birthday and Christmas. And I don't even think I really knew, like at the time when I was a little boy, I thought it was stupid because it was one of them gifts that you couldn't use. It was like, in 50 years, this is gonna be worth something. But anyway, I had these savings bonds, and additional to the bond that my mom's sister gave us another one. So we had these stacks of bonds. When I got ready to graduate college, those bonds were worth about $2,000. So in 1998, 1999, I cashed those bonds out and bought stock in Microsoft and Cisco in the late 90s. 1999. Right after that, right after Y2K, the market boomed. Microsoft split, Cisco split, and I basically doubled that money. Took it out, and that's what I used as my down payment on our first house. We weren't married at the time, so I bought this house. I was 20, maybe 21. and I used it as down payment on my house. It made sense to buy the house to me. My goal at that time, this is before we had kids, I wanted to buy that house, and then my goal was for the next 10 years, buy one piece of property every year until I had 10 properties after 10 years. But instead I had three kids. So if you want to know how much kids cost, they're 10 properties worth. Right.
Yeah.
10 properties.
About three properties a piece.
Yeah, three properties a piece and a basement. That's right. That's how you count it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Now that's interesting. That's also it's dope to hear, because a lot of people don't realize how fast 10 or 12 years can pass by.
Yes.
Like it passes by extremely fast. When you was a kid, it seemed like forever. You giving us these bonds and what am I gonna do with this?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then it's just like, okay, now you buying stocks at such a young age. But even now, it's like I'm not as well versed into stocks or anything I would like to be, because I am so eager to start buying into some type of stock, because I just want to start putting that money away and letting my money work for itself. You know, money needs to work for me and not the vice versa.
So how did you know? What made you go, Microsoft, this is where I want to put my money?
All of my entire career is based off of this mentorship that I had when I worked at the National Finance Center in New Orleans. There was a guy that went to my college, that graduated from my college. His name was Keith Gearin. He was an assistant programmer like I ended up doing, but he also was a day trader. That's what he did at his desk. He taught me about the stock market. He looked at it every day. He read the Wall Street Journal. And so not only did he teach me the system stuff, which I'm still doing to this day, he also introduced me to, you know, the stock market. And at the time, I bought Microsoft and Cisco because they were cheap at the time. They were probably $20 a share for Microsoft and probably in the teens for Cisco. And he said, man, these are going to blow up. And at the time, you know, that I was like, I don't really know what that means. But he told me to just buy this, set it, and forget it. And the best part is convincing my mama that I was going to take that bond money and invest it, which she was not having it. But that's what I did, and it ended up really being beneficial. And if we didn't do that, like that decision governed every other decision in our lives. Like us being able to own that first home. Because what we did from that first home, I got in on the ground floor. We built that house in a new neighborhood. And 2 years later, we sold it.
Yeah.
And we sold it, and we probably made about 25, 30 grand.
Yeah, because we sold it. We were one of the first houses in that neighborhood. So it appreciated really fast.
Uh-huh.
And then when we built another house that was bigger.
Yeah.
But we were still in a new part of an existing neighborhood, and it appreciated really fast as well. So
we took that money, that savings from the first house. And so you got to think that this is where I'm kind of this big idea person, and you know, Jamie kind of keeps me under control, because at the time I said we need to sell our house, we were just barely making it. Uh-huh. And I was going to transition us to this bigger house. But at the time, our credit score was good and the interest rates were low. So we were going to flip into that new house at the same amount that we were in the house we were in. Yeah. But in order to do that, we had to spend about 18 months living in a townhouse.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So we had to downsize severely.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we made about 35, 40K on the house. Banked it, and then moved into a townhouse that was probably maybe $600 less than we were paying.
Oh, yeah.
And that savings, we just kept saving. Yeah. And that's what allowed us to move into that bigger house and not feel the weight of it.
Run of it. See, that's what's different about Kentucky than here, is that renting here is more expensive than owning.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm. So well,
if you're in California, listen to the pod, come move to Kentucky.
Well, you know what? Because we only had one child at the time.
Right.
The renting was cheaper. Was doable, but yeah. I think if we were like today, that would not be the case.
Right.
That would not be the case.
Which will be interesting. Our next, the person that we'll be having on next, she owns multiple properties, but lives in none of the properties she owns. So so I know there's a way to do it. She lives out here. But okay, so you all decided to, you invested, Damien, you took that money, you put it into real estate. Which do you all feel like is the better investment? Stock market or real estate?
Go ahead. I would say real estate. Mm-hmm. Because they're not making any more land. If you own land, then, I mean, they're not making any more of that. You can't get no more of that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? So, and that was the advice that was given to me a long time ago, mm-hmm, by a very old, old wise man. He was like, always buy the land because they're not making any more of that. Mm-hmm. It's not land popping up. They can't manufacture it. If you have the land, then you have the power.
Uh-huh.
But that's just what I was taught.
And I agree with that, especially, on the level we're at. I think the stock market makes you money if you have money. Like, once you reach a point where you have a high amount of appreciating assets, then you should transition over to the stocks because it'll make you more money. But it's real hard for just throwing $30-$40 at the stock market for you to truly make life-changing money. So I agree that in the short term, real estate is universal. Everybody speak that language. And ain't but one earth, and they're not building a new one. So there's always value in owning that land. And I wish, especially for Black people, that we had started being landowners sooner and having that mindset. Because as much as we complain about gentrification, the baseline of gentrification is ownership. They can't gentrify if we didn't sell it. And some of those legacy lands that have been in our families for years and years, we took the quick money, and we lost really the power of these cultured neighborhoods. And that's what we're trying not to get into now that, I'm 42, and our goal is legacy building.
Yeah.
And that our kids have not only land to walk in, but also businesses to run or to manage if they want.
So let's jump in a little bit deeper to that. So this will be kind of twofold, and hopefully you all be able to figure out a way to answer it. One, now that you all are walking in or living in a little more of an abundance, you're not at the 48,000 a year, you have three kids, you all are in property number, what, three or four?
Four.
Property number four. What are you all, how are you all handling your money now? And what are the steps you are taking to build this legacy for your three girls?
You want me to answer?
Mm, you can.
So over the past how long you been at Bama?
It'll be 4 years in December.
Over the past 4 years, Jamie hadn't worked impactful job. When I say impactful job, like a real wage job, she'd done assistant teaching and this, that, and the other. But 4 years ago, she started working. I mean, a job. I mean, a insurance having, butt kicking job. And that was the first time really in our marriage that she had had this sizable, income coming in. And it did change the game. But what happened before we got to that point, we had paid off all of our debt. So we had zero debt other than our house at the time that she added this job. So for us, that was just like money just being added to our life because we didn't use that for our day-to-day bills. We just banked it.
Yeah.
Which was really beneficial. But what we did is we had been saving all this money to do a renovation. And we figured that the money we had saved for a renovation, that we couldn't convert our current house into what we really wanted. Mm-hmm. So we used that money we had saved for the renovation as the down payment to the next house. Mm-hmm. And that's the house that we're in now. So at the same time Jamie got her job, I got a new job and my income increased. So once we moved into the new house, both of our incomes had pretty much, you know, nearly doubled. So we were just living. I mean, we were just,
Jamie's like, what checkbook?
Right. We ain't had no checkbook. We just living. But the past year, and especially during COVID has shown us why we had the principles that we did when we paid off all of our debt.
Yeah.
Because we can't control when the uncontrollable happens.
Yeah.
And I had to miss 4 weeks of work due to COVID. It didn't break us, but we definitely felt it. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time, I think in a long time, that we had ever felt that fear mm-hmm. that we felt when we were first married. Like, I don't know where the money gonna come from.
Yeah.
You know, and unemployed, I ain't get no unemployment. I still got to claim unemployment.
Listen, not a dime.
Listen, when I find that unemployment dude is running it, me and him gonna have an immediate misunderstanding.
Wait a minute, David. I'm sorry to cut you off. I have to get to our third sponsor really quick.
Sponsor.
Finish the story because this is so good. But I want to tell you about an app that I have very much so fell in love with called Peanut. We talked about them our last episode, and I just think this app is so super duper helpful. Just like this finance series, I feel like this app is perfect for anyone who is expecting a pregnant mom to be, or a mom that just wants to meet like-minded moms. Peanut provides a safe space for mothers, expecting mothers, and those trying to conceive to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are in similar stages in life, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, adoption, pregnancy, first years, or nursery and beyond, Peanut is a safe place to connect with women like you. I just have to say that for me, you know, having had four kids, every pregnancy, I always felt like I needed a support system. When I was pregnant with twins, I wanted to meet other twin moms because I was like, I'm experiencing something that a lot of you other women ain't experienced, and I don't want to hear about your life. I need to know what's about to happen to my life, and I need to know that you're experiencing what I am about to experience. Mm-hmm. So with this app, you can just go to peanut.app.link/Marcus and Angel, or you can find it in the app store and you can download it and you can get to meeting moms that are just like you. It's super duper safe. Like I said, they even verify by having you take a selfie to make sure you are a real person, so that like you can feel comfortable connecting and sharing your experience or getting advice from other women in the same stage of life as you. Again, please head to peanut.app.link/Marcus and Angel or find it on your app store. Thank you so much to Peanut for sponsoring this episode. Okay, Damien, so go ahead, pick it up where you left off.
So we out here living high off the hog and just kind of throwing money out the window. And because of that, we did start accumulating debt again. I mean, you know, and my justification was always, we can just pay it off early. I mean, it ain't really no sweat. And I remember posting on Twitter, it says, and I just put a picture with a guy with a shocked face, and it said, the feeling you feel when you notice that your 12-month savings cash is due today and you still ain't paid it off.
That interest is trash.
They be pulling it from everywhere.
Yes.
I mean, they be jumping off the top rope. I mean, it'd be interest everywhere. So we decided, because of COVID and because of the financial slowdown that I experienced, that our goal is to never be in a position where someone else can control our money again. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I am. And, you know, I want our kids to kind of be in that mindset as well, that I want them to pursue their own careers, but I want us to give them a baseline that they can choose to do, that's a part of their legacy, that they can walk in, if they so choose. They're going to work in the business, whether they want to or not, while they're in the house. But once they get finished, they can have a space and a place to work and to be. And so now we're back on our plan. We're back on the same plan. We're living now the same way we did when we were budgeting and trying to pay down. And I ain't gonna lie, like Jamie's discipline, and this is why we work well together, it's killing me because, you know, I mean, we got money in the bank and I know it's there, but no, we can't spend it because we saving it for this. And I'm like, but we got the money. And nope, gotta stay focused. And I'm like,
yeah, you like, but the hell with focus. I'm trying to spend this cash and get what I think I deserve.
What you mean I can't make it rain? I mean, I can make it rain. I can at least make it thunder or something.
Something or other. Well, I asked you all to give, prior to this, in preparation for this episode, to give 5 tips that you all would give when it comes to money management that you feel like would be helpful, especially to us and to our listeners.
Okay.
So
we'll do 1, 1, 1, 1.
Oh.
Are you gonna get 5? Did I get 5?
Oh, I don't know.
I ain't got 5. So we gotta do.
I could probably get 5.
All right, well, go ahead. You got it. Okay.
So first, you have to know how much debt you have.
So, that one hurts, Jamie. I already don't like it.
I'm sorry. And you have to know how much money, whether it's, you know, actual debt or just how much money are you spending out? How much money do you have to spend out every month? So you know how much money you make. Write down every bill that you have. Write down every, I mean, I'm talking not just utility bill, water bill, you know, phone bill, DirecTV, or whatever you have, whatever your bills are. And whatever your credit card bills are, whatever, anything that you have to pay out monthly, write it down. Find out what is that amount that you have to pay out every month. And then look at how much you're bringing in every month and subtract that.
Right. Simple math.
It's very simple math, but it's an eye-opening experience.
It is. I don't want my eyes open, Jake.
but it's an eye-opening experience. When we did it, we found out that we were spending something like $400 a week just on fast food. Wow. We totaled up Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, and it wasn't for us. It was mostly for the girls.
Yeah.
And we added all that up, and it was like, I'm not exaggerating, it was like $400 a week.
It's because at the time, you know, we had 3 girls. They're very busy. They're in dance classes. They got horseback riding. They got, you know, all the after-school stuff that we had. So we'd pick them up from school, and then we're going straight to, you know, whatever activity. And, oh, on the way, let's grab food because they got to eat. And then after they do the activity, now it's like 3 hours later. Oh, now we got to go home and it's almost bedtime. So we got to get something on the way home. And then they got to do homework. So, yeah, we were spending a lot of money just eating. We just eating the money.
But you don't see that.
This one. No, go to number 2. We get it. No, I don't want it.
Okay, number 1, know your debt and income.
Know right. your income, know your debt.
Number 2, I would say is one of the 7 habits of highly successful people that you should start with the end in mind. That before you start your budget, that you also be mindful of what your goal is.
Okay.
That before you take a step towards anything, that you know where you're going. One of the questions that Jamie, I always ask, we don't say, can we afford X, Y, and Z? We say, well, what do we want? Even if we can't afford it today, fine. But let's be patient and wait for what we want instead of buying things we don't want, because the chances of rebuying is going to be high. So we try our very best to make sure, even though I still like to hook up and I like, you know, buying, you know, used stuff. Like when we really are focused on what we want, like we're trying to get the best available at the lowest price, of course, but the best available. And we start with the end in mind.
All right.
That's number 2.
Okay. Number 3, I would say, after you find out how much money you got left after you pay all your bills.
Amy. Yes.
Sorry. I'm sorry. It hurts.
No, she needs to hear it.
You got to know.
Then, student loans, baby.
Shut up. I know how much I own those. Go ahead.
Then you take that money and, like, you pay yourself first. You take half of that and you put it in savings. You take the other half and you start paying down your lowest debt.
Oh, so you like the debt snowball?
Absolutely.
So
make sure you pay yourself, because if you never see your savings account build up, then you're going to feel like you haven't accomplished anything. Mm-hmm. You have to pay. And if something comes up, you have nothing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? You may not have even paid off that credit card yet. Mm-hmm. So not only have you not paid off your credit card, but you ain't got nothing in the bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have to pay yourself something, even if it's just all you can do is $10 a week. Put that $10 a week and leave it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then start paying off that, the smallest debt. And I say the smallest because it's important for you to be able to see yourself making progress.
Right. Mm-hmm. You feel that
it's like weight loss. I mean, it's the same, you know, and your successes will breed success.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we were doing that before we really knew that Dave Ramsey was a full thing.
Yeah.
Like that, that is that something that just makes sense to Jamie.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I had to go through the financial piece. I had the CDs. And I went through all of them, but that's been Jamie's philosophy all along. So it was real easy. Like even using the cash envelopes, which is a Dave Ramsey principle. Jamie came up with that, like, and wanted us to do that year one of us being married.
Yeah. So it was Dave was jocking her style. I see. Dave was jocking your style.
Yes, and I ain't getting no credit for that.
Get his money.
And that's interesting what you said about paying yourself, because I was just, I think I said in the last podcast, or maybe I even told Angel, it's like when I see, the more money I make, the more money I see in my accounts, the less I want to spend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like every time I see more, I'm like, I don't need that. I like the way this looks. I want triple. Right. I want quite.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then I realized I said myself, I'm like, yeah, the more I see, the less I want to spend. It's crazy.
What's number four?
I would say number four, and this is just for married people, transparency is key. Mm-hmm. Like, it is really, really difficult for a couple to arrive at financial goals if they have secrets. Mm-hmm. We always teach when we have marital counseling that a man needs support, a woman needs security, but neither one of them are possible if you're selfish. Mm-hmm. And I think that those secrets, especially within finances, is just wanting to be selfish. And I think any act for a unit that is me-focused is dangerous for we. Mm-hmm. So I think transparency is key. That doesn't mean that, you know, Jamie doesn't have to come to me when she spends money. She does her thing, I do our thing. But our general rule, if it's over probably $250, $300, well, for me.
Jamie said, if it's close to 100,
yes,
exactly.
Yes, yeah. If it's close to 100, Jamie's having a conversation. She's now listen. I'm like, Jamie, we needed toilet paper. She was like, but I bought toilet paper and paper towels. You understand? Just making sure we good. I'm like, yeah, Jamie, we good. But in those crucial decisions, like we don't do it in the dark. You know, it ain't a, you know, I'm doing something over here. Jamie's doing something. We have to agree.
Yeah.
That's really, and a lot of times we don't.
Yeah.
So our principle that has governed our 18 years of marriage is it takes two yeses to be a yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A yes and a no, or a yes and a no, does not equal us doing it. We cannot move forward until both of us say yes. And
that can be hard. That's a lot of conversation.
A lot
of heated in our conversation sometimes.
Mm, yeah.
Especially if you want it bad.
Right.
Ooh, warm conversations.
Oh, Marcus would be then hurt with his guns. He'd be like, oh no, we can't do this because it'll never be.
Yeah. There's gonna be all kinds of secrets. Don't open that door. Don't open that door right there. You don't want to open that right there. Just leave that closed. This house ever catch on fire, you stay away from that right there.
Right? Okay, number five.
Ooh, what's number five? Let me think.
Go ahead. You give number
five. I'm trying to think of one.
Well, I'll say this. You know, I believe that you have to be willing to take some calculated risk in order to get to the next level. I've gotten to the point where I'm starting to discover our value. Mm-hmm. And you know, I watch Jamie go to work every day, and she's excellent at her job. But comparative to what her industry is, as much work as she does and what she brings home, it doesn't match.
Yeah.
And here recently in March, I was talking to a guy that I work with daily, and we do the same job, and he works for a different company. He's a contractor. And I can't even figure out how much more he makes than me. He makes probably 6 times more than me. And we do the same job. We work together daily.
Wow.
The difference between him and me is that he owns his space and I'm working for someone. And so in my mind, I've been conditioned to believe that my value or my security is based on working for someone else. Mm-hmm. When really my value and security, like my greatest gift is my willingness to grind, to work hard. Mm-hmm. And I have killed that by allowing my money and my future to be tied up in how hard my industry works. Mm-hmm. And I'm changing that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That I've always believed, and this probably gonna sound arrogant, but I've always believed my entire life that I was gonna change the world. I've always believed that. I mean, and I thought pastoring was kind of the avenue to do that. But I know now more than I ever have that this is the time where we're gonna establish this base of training, hiring, empowering the next generation of Black entrepreneurs. And, you know, if white people want to pay us to do that, I'm good with that too. But my focus is for the next generation of Black entrepreneurs, specifically in technology, for them to have a space to grow, get trained, and create, and they can work under our umbrella to eventually own themselves, because it's just an industry. You know, I've worked for 20 years being the only Black on my team for 20 years. Mm. 20 years on my team specifically, not another Black person that I've worked with as a peer in 20 years.
I'm only Black on my team too.
Right. And along that time, I've trained probably 15 people. Some of them were dumb as a box of rocks, had IQs of a chewed raisin, and I still trained them to do our job, making high salary for somebody else. And I'm no longer afraid to take the risk of doing it myself because I believe wholeheartedly in our ability, and eventually Jamie will run the back office of our business. I'm confident that we will not fail because, I mean, we've not failed in anything that we've done. Well, a couple of things, but we don't want to talk about them on the pod. That ain't the point of the pod, you know what I'm saying?
Right. That ain't the point of the pod, right. No.
But you know, I think our girls need to see that from us.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, our nieces and nephews who are trying to discover this world and trying to discover their place. And for me, if we're going to truly be impactful, we got to start owning. We got to start being about our own change. It's how you transform neighborhoods, communities, and be about legacy building. Be scared.
Calculated risk. Now, you said that we have two questions.
We have two questions.
We got two questions for y'all.
You kind of already answered one. B. Crumbling wants to know if you are teaching your children about finances and how to manage finances.
Brittany wanted to know that. Are you actively teaching, or are you just letting them, like your parents did, you just hoping that they pick it up by seeing you all?
No, So we, our oldest daughter is a sophomore in college, and her freshman year, we just kind of let her be to see how she was going to handle stuff. And the girl was just loving life, just living it up. You know, hey, drop a little something in my bank account, please. And, you know, I was in college when I really learned how to really, really manage, because my parents were not giving me any more money. My dad was like, you on your own. So I got my little $500 stipend and I had to make that work.
Right.
And then I got a job, and I mean, what I got is what I got, you know. And I made that stretch. I mean, that $500, whoo, I could do some things with that. So, you know, I really started talking to her, and I was like, look, at first I was not going to give her all of the money that she needed for the semester. I was going to just kind of, you know, give it to her every week or every 2 weeks, however. And then I said, you know, I'm going to give this to you because you have to learn how to manage it.
Yeah.
You need to see it coming out. And she is tight. She don't like to see her money go away. Just like Marcus said, there's security when you look in that account and you see, you know, a nice little amount. And then when you see that go down, she gets real, real agitated real quick. Because she'll like to spend our money before she spends hers.
Yeah, of course. the funny part is she was paying her rent online, and there was a, how much was the fee?
It was a $6 fee.
A $6 fee to pay it online. And you didn't have that fee if you paid it via check. Now, she didn't even have no checks, because, you know, she's a millennial baby. She was like, what check? So, in the mail just here recently, we got a thing of checks that she ordered, because she was like, you ain't gonna be taking my good $6.
$6 that's gonna be sitting in my account. Right.
So to answer the question, we didn't when they were growing up. We are with our oldest now. I've been working with our 15-year-old about just being financially aware. Open her a bank account, and we're going to do the same for our 13-year-old probably next year when she starts transitioning to high school, to try to help them to have at least a money awareness.
Yeah.
And then we'll help them with, you know, kind of future planning and goal setting.
Yeah, they're actually now, you know, they've always gotten money, you know, from grandparents and aunts and uncles and everybody for Christmas and birthdays. So they've always had money. And really, they were good at saving it. I mean, but they really didn't know what the value of it was.
Right.
You know, so it would literally, like, our youngest would have hundreds of dollars in her piggy bank. And
not even be aware of it. Yeah.
No, meant that's nothing. Like
yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, in the last few years, I was like, well, you know, well, Mama, can I go to Baskin Robbins?
Where your money?
Go get your money.
Yeah.
What? Go get your money.
Why did I spend my money when you got your money that I can spend?
Well, and then it went from, well, I got money so I can spend. I want extra rolls, so let me. I got money, and she's pulling out 20s, and I'm like, oh, is that how you're gonna spend it? Because it's gonna go really fast that way.
Yeah, it will.
So she had to learn, you know, and we went from, you know, hoarding the money and not really knowing what it was worth to, oh, I got money, I can get what I want. And then seeing it leave, and the pain that comes with
it. It's not just going to show back up.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, no.
Now, I would say all three of them are aware, physically aware. And we are now starting to teach them what to do with it, how to manage it.
Right.
Got you.
Got it.
Okay. And then last question was from Hannah J. They're asking about college. Are you paying for college? Are you having them go to affordable colleges? Like, how are you making them pay for themselves?
Good question.
That's a good question. So we started saving for their college 14 years ago. Yeah. And the way we have it set up, kind of like the Christmas account, a portion of his check just goes straight to their college savings accounts. So we never even see it. We don't miss it. It's not something that we add into our budget, because it's completely taken out and dropped into their accounts. And that's the way it's been for the last 14 years. Like I said, our oldest is already in school. She did get an academic scholarship, but it didn't cover everything. So last year, we did have to come out of our pocket some. This year, she's in the athletic training program. So this year, 20% of her tuition was paid in along with the academic scholarship. So it just so happened that, you know, when it was come time to pay the tuition, I was like, so, you know, what's the balance? What do we owe? We didn't owe anything. In fact, she had a residual.
Mm-hmm. We had a credit. can we pause the podcast to shout right quick? Come on now.
Yes.
But we are, you know, we're hoping and praying that, yes, all of the girls will get an academic scholarship, that all of them will be so blessed. Mm-hmm. But in the event that we do have to come out of our pocket, we are saving. Personally, I don't feel, you know, I know everybody has their own different opinion on this, opinions, but I don't feel that it's fair for my children to have to pay for their own college education. Mm-hmm. Now, if they want to go beyond college or whatever, you know, that might be different. Maybe we'll pay half. Maybe, I don't know. We'll kind of think about that as it comes. But undergrad, I feel like, and I don't believe that, I don't want them to have to work while they're in school. Now, my oldest is working because she's in the athletic training program. So she has to work. She's putting in some hours. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want her to have to, you know, go and work at Chili's or go and work at the shoe carnival or whatever. I wanted her to be able to focus on her academics. And that's kind of the way I want all of my children. I want them to be able to focus on their academics, get their four-year degree without having to worry. Because I feel like if I can give them that step up, if I can give them that boost, that will, it makes a huge difference. And yeah. And I feel like, you know.
And so Marcus, you know, like once again, undergrad for us, it was a business decision. Mm-hmm. I would have loved Brianna to go to a HBCU. I think that's really, really valuable.
And we looked at several.
We looked at them, and she looked at Southern. She considered going to my alma mater, Southern University, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the home of the Jaguars. Anyway, but
instead, she's bleeding blue at the big blue
yes. And the more I listen to you and Jamie, the more I'm worried about that education. Whatever. What I'm
good quality education. Quality.
She's a wildcat.
But it was a business decision. I mean, it's non-emotional. She didn't go, you know, based on, you know, this, that and the other. Like, who's gonna give you the most money, and how can you get out at the smallest amount? Getting into the training program was huge. By the time she graduates, the training program will be paying her.
Yeah.
And if after she graduates, she wants to go, she said she wants to do her grad school at HBCU, I welcome that.
Yeah.
And so I think that she's on the right step. And we're going to kind of, you know, lead the same way. You know, every money that's out there that's available, we're going to use it. Yeah. We ain't going to leave nothing on the table. And, you know, I'm not going to let you say I'm gonna go to this school just because they got a cool mascot or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Nah, fam.
Yeah. She decided on UK because of the athletic training program.
Yes.
In order for her, I mean, by being associated with the University of Kentucky Athletics, that will put her leaps and bounds ahead of, you know, where other schools and where she could have been. You know, this year she gets 20% of her tuition paid. Next year it's 40. And the next year to be 60. Mm-hmm. So it was a no-brainer, really. Yeah.
No, it makes sense. Well, we want to thank you all for all the nuggets you all have dropped and for being our first guests in our family and finance series. do you all, I know y'all don't really be doing social media like that, even though Damie be having trigger fingers on Twitter, but is there a place that you would like for them to follow you or any of that?
Oh, you gotta ask him.
They can follow me on the Twitters.
The Twitters.
And the Instagrammers at The Thompson 65. That is me on both of them.
The Thompson.
You didn't enunciate.
Because you are D.A. Thompson on something. So don't, that's why I was like, you don't even put out your personal, like your personal.
Yeah, this is my Finsta.
Right. Yeah, no, but follow him at The Thompson, you said 6'5"?
Yes.
on both Twitter and Instagram. Jamie, you'd like just follow him.
Just follow him.
I understand.
I really don't.
He said, I'm over here budgeting the checkbook. I ain't got time for all this food.
Right. Marcus. She's like, what's this $5 for some Patreon? Who is Patreon and why are you paying her $5?
First of all, you tell that helper she can come over here and pay some bills.
Right.
Right.
But this checkbook. Tell me what they call
you. You see Patreon, she going to swell up.
So, of course, y'all can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Marcus Ain't on the Gram and Marcus Ain't on the Book. You can go to manshit.com. That's M-A-N-S-H-Y-T. You can find my beard and body butter.
You can follow me at That Chick Angel on all platforms except for Twitter, but you can still follow me if you type in That Chick Angel. It's not my handle.
She don't tweet. Don't follow her on Twitter.
I tweeted like 3 times last month. I'm proud of myself. Follow me there. And you can follow this podcast at Is This Gonna Cause an Argument? Also on Instagram and Facebook. And you guys, we'll be back next week with another phenomenal guest, somebody that I actually am in contact with on a weekly basis about finances, who's really good that I think you all will enjoy. So please come back. Again, a special thank you to Damien and Jamie Thompson.
Thank you for coming through.
For participating in this. Thank you to our Patreon for being here live with us. And again, thank you to Usual Wines, Magic Spoon, and Peanut for sponsoring this episode. So until next Wednesday, y'all be blessed, and we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.